Welcome to Wheels Across the West, History and Legacy of the Santa Fe Trail, a production by students at the Kinder Institute on Constitutional Democracy at the University of Missouri, presented by the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm Abigail Ramirez, your host for this episode, Who is the Western Woman? Close your eyes and imagine your idea of the Wild West. What do you see? Do you see vast prairies and open land full of animals and grain? Do you see wheels turning or mules pulling wagons on dirt roads? Do you see Native Americans roaming the plains? Or do you see a cowboy? Now imagine the Western woman. Just as the Wild West encompasses all of the ideas you had seconds before this, the Western woman is just as diverse. The idea of what constitutes the Western woman has had different meanings. Originally muddled by Anglo-American ideals of domesticity, the Western woman was trivialized as a traveling mother taking care of her family on long journeys to California, Oregon, Washington, or Santa Fe. This version of the Western woman is right, but it is just a snippet of the story. Historian Glenda Riley explains that we must consider continuity and change, the integration of cultures, roles of activism and objectivity, and frontier stereotypes to nail down the Western woman. At this time, the American Southwest was not only filled with travelers and immigrants. Native American tribes and Mexicans inhabited land that was unincorporated to the United States before 1850. Is the Western woman Susan McGoffin, a wife traveling with her husband to New Mexico along the Santa Fe Trail? Or is she a New Mexican woman who enters court to complain about her husband in public? Julia Archibald, who helped spearhead her family's rise into politics in the West? Or was it a Hispanic woman cultivating an economy of her own through pottery or ceramics? In this episode, we'll dive into the identity of the Western woman along the Santa Fe Trail. My name is Abigail Ramirez, and this is Wheels Across the West. In the 19th century, most women traveled west with families or husbands, rarely alone. With them, they brought ideals and ways of life from the East that wouldn't necessarily translate into their new way of life on the Santa Fe Trail. Susan McGoffin, wife of Samuel McGoffin, is a great example of this. I'm glad to welcome my fellow teamster, Elise Milburn, to talk about Mrs. McGoffin's experience. Elise, welcome to the Western Woman episode.
Glad to be on another episode of Wheels Across the West.
Tell us more about Susan McGoffin's initial experiences on the trail and her role in the caravans.
I don't mean to say this harshly, but she really didn't do a whole lot. That was probably because of her particular circumstances, though. Samuel McGoffin was incredibly wealthy, which meant they had servants, tents, and food at the ready to help them on their journey down to Santa Fe. She focused mainly on making the journey seem homey, which she specified in her journals.
That's so interesting. Tell me more about that.
Well, Susan never really had a home of her own. Her first experience of the Anglo-American ideal of motherhood in her very new marriage was on the trail. She kept a journal, added flowers to their wagon, and did her best to make things feel the way they would if they were sedentary. In their tent, she tried to make sure everything was comfortable, and she and her husband even had a raised bed, which was pretty unusual at the time, especially on a Santa Fe Trail trip. Something interesting about Susan is that she made an effort to learn the terminology and culture of the trail, because that was really what was natural to her and her idea of creating a good home life. She would record notes on things that people said on the trail, such as their midday naps. Susan really embraced the idea of the trail and eventually started to experience and appreciate the independence that came along with the travel.
Well, thank you so much for guest starring on this episode, Elise, and telling us more about Mrs. McGoffin.
It was my pleasure.
Many women were brought to the Santa Fe Trail with their husbands. Martha Woods traveled to the trail from Virginia in a series of different companies. In her diary, held in the State Historical Society of Missouri's Friends of Arrow Rock collection, she explains her role on the trail as quite minute. Martha's initial stories of life on the trail call back to traditional gender roles of women in the East. Similar to McGoffin, she focused most of her energy on the types and amounts of food in her company, her relationship with God and other women, and the vast amount of energy it took to travel on the Santa Fe Trail. You would assume that her lack of energy would indicate a high level of involvement in the inner workings of the caravan, but no. At the beginning of her journey, Woods rarely left the periphery of the company, and seldom went out without a man. Even for the most adventurous women, persistent protection by men was a common theme for them at the beginning of their journeys. For example, despite her adventurous nature, Rebecca Mayer was never alone on her journey and always accompanied by her husband. On her honeymoon with her husband, Henry, Rebecca enjoyed the excitement and wildness of the journey to Santa Fe from the safety of the company or caravan while others set off to hunt, fix the wagon, or make contacts with Native American tribes. It's all described in her diary from that year. I ride horseback nearly all day long, and I am having a grand time and am enjoying every minute of the journey. I have my own horse. No one else can ride her. Robert tried to mount my horse the other day. She threw him off, and he got a lot of bruises. He won't try that again. The horse is always gentle with me and obeys my slightest command. Compared to Martha Woods, Rebecca embraced the ruggedness and individualistic spirit of the trail. While her journeys started in carriages, much of her time on the Santa Fe Trail was spent on horseback. While Rebecca traveled beyond the company occasionally, she still traveled everywhere with the company of her husband. But this didn't stop her from learning new skills, skills that were typically only used by American men. Henry often takes me when he goes hunting, and he is teaching me how to shoot. At first, he was dreadfully shocked because I wore trousers, but now he is very glad that I have discarded the long skirts of my riding habit. After the break, we'll investigate Native American and Mexican women of the West. In the meantime, here's a word from our co-sponsors, the Missouri Humanities Council. We'll be right back. We on the Santa Fe Trail Project are excited to be teaming up with the Missouri Humanities Council. Missouri Humanities is one of the 56 state and territorial humanities councils that receive support from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Their team works on partnerships, community outreach, and programs that explore Missouri's heritage, such as our project. We're very excited to be collaborating with them for our 10-episode podcast series. And without further ado, let's get back to the episode. This is Wheels Across the West, and I'm Abby Ramirez. Our old friend Susan McGoffin was one of the first travelers venturing to Santa Fe who came into contact with New Mexican women. Historian Janet LeCompte describes Susan's first impressions of these women in The Independent Women of Hispanic New Mexico, 1821 to 1846. She was startled by their chemises and petticoats, which Anglo-American women only wore as undergarments. New Mexican women laughed at McGoffin's dependence on her husband. In fact, one woman brought McGoffin to tears with a joke that he could have been off with his other señorita. While New Mexican women generally acted politely, according to McGoffin, their way of life differed greatly from Anglo-American women traveling west. In the 19th century, Anglo-American women's roles in the public and economic sphere dwindled as gender roles enforced their position in the homes with families. It is not a coincidence that New Mexican women embraced a certain boldness that women like McGoffin did not. New Mexican women retained property, legal rights, wages, and maiden names after marriage. A New Mexican woman was not typically expected to be subordinate to men, except when she was interacting with Anglo-Americans. New Mexican women often held jobs in addition to leading the family. These could include working as servants, bakers, weavers, gold panners, shepherds, midwives, ironers, and prostitutes. Women were also incredibly engaged in civil life. Many women would arrive at court with accusations against others in town, ranging from her husband cheating on her or at another woman for slander. Unlike the U.S. legal system, women weren't the only ones held responsible for infidelity and other marital indiscretions. LeCompte notes that court records seem to show that standards of behavior were essentially the same for both sexes. Pueblo natives, in some respect, followed this trend as well. In Women, Reproduction, and Religion in Western Puebloan Society, Jane Young explains how the community acted to uplift both sexes. the Pueblo people did not have the same male-female, public-private, powerful, powerless, binary relationships that men and women had in Anglo-American society. For Pueblos, every man and woman was respected for their sphere within the community. Women were in control of the domestic sphere. In fact, Puebloan families are matrilocal and matrilineal. This means that household goods follow the mother, the husband moves in with the wife's family, and is under the direction of the wife's father. And women were able to own their own houses in Pueblo society, too. Similar to Anglo-Americans, Pueblo natives saw the woman's duty as producing life and feeding. But this did not limit Pueblo women in the same way as those in the United States. In Pueblo society, women used such status to influence their husband in the community and the community activity of men. The domestic realm of Puebloan society was not limited to individual households. It extended to the role of the entire village and the way individuals saw the entire community. The same way a person's house provided them with a sense of place or safety, so did the community. As power in the household flowed through the line of the mother, so did the power dynamics within the Pueblo society. And with the introduction of a cash economy, in part due to the Santa Fe Trail, the dominance of women dwindled. Pueblo men became less willing to give their wives the fruits of their labor. As a result, many women started to enter the workforce, birth control methods became more widespread and accepted, and family sizes grew smaller. And the change pushed women to begin participating directly in tribal politics. In Santa Fe, Pueblo and New Mexican women weren't the only ones actively participating in the public sphere. Julia Archibald Holmes, another Santa Fe Trail traveler, had an extraordinary upbringing. Her teenage home in Kansas Territory became a stop on the Underground Railroad. Her father was one of the first 11 men who voted in a formal election in the territory. John Brown, the militant abolitionist and leader of the raid on Harper's Ferry, was a close friend of the family. Julia's mother considered Susan B. Anthony, a landmark suffragist at the time, a personal friend. It is no wonder that Holmes then would grow up to be a prominent woman along the Santa Fe Trail. Holmes took her first trip to Santa Fe in 1858 with her husband, James Henry Holmes, and brother, Albert Archibald. Unlike other wives on the trail, Julia did not sit back and relax. She aided her brother in learning Spanish to help him become a successful trader in the Hispanic Southwest. She traveled up to Pike's Peak in search of gold with her husband and a company of other men. For Julia, climbing Pike's Peak was more than just a search for adventure and gold. It was showing the world that women were just as capable as men. And like Rebecca Mayer, she did it in comfortable, logical pants. When arriving in New Mexico, Julia and James Holmes began engaging in business and politics. Success and prominence came quickly after, with James being appointed to Secretary of the Territory of New Mexico by President Abraham Lincoln. To voice their opinions against slavery, the couple created a weekly newspaper, the Santa Fe Republican. Articles published in the newspaper would lead to the end of the Holmes' time in Santa Fe. James was arrested, and after going to Washington to gather support for her husband, Julia would later move in with relatives before settling in D.C. after the war. Despite the absence of her husband, Julia remained very engaged with politics, attending the National Women's Suffrage Association convention in 1869. She would later divorce James and go on to work for the U.S. Department of the Interior. While her time in Santa Fe was cut short, the spirit of the Santa Fe Trail followed Julia as soon as she arrived in Kansas Territory. Her role models, such as Susan B. Anthony and John Brown, played a major part in the shaping of her outgoing personality. However, would this sort of independence hold steady in the East or South at the time? Would women arriving in Kansas, such as Susan McGoffin or Martha Woods, find such sentiments appropriate? Probably not. The West and the Santa Fe Trail symbolize a movement in America that instilled women with a sort of power and liberty that was not common in much of the country at the time. Indeed, the West did begin enfranchising women much earlier than the rest of the country. The first states to ratify the 19th Amendment were all Western states, including Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Idaho, and Kansas. So, who is the Western woman? Is she a timid Anglo-Saxon woman in a wagon with her husband descending along the trail for the first time? A New Mexican woman taking her husband to court? A Pueblo woman engaging in politics for the first time? The answer is that there is no answer. The Santa Fe Trail gives us a chance to understand that the Western woman comes from Mexico, Europe, the Pueblo tribe, Native American nations. She is a mother, a wife, a house owner, an engaged citizen, coming into contact with new ideas, new people, and new roles to create a complex, ever-evolving story about the creation of America. No matter who she is, the Western woman on the Santa Fe Trail is brave and increasingly independent. This episode of Wheels Across the West was written and narrated by me, Abigail Ramirez. Our producer and engineer is Kyle Jackson, and our executive producer is Jay Sexton, director of the Kinder Institute at the University of Missouri. This podcast is recorded at KBIA Studios in Columbia, Missouri, and distributed in partnership with the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm fine and dandy. Never been better. I've never been worse. I've been up, I've been down, I've been lost, I've been found. I am so gosh darn confused. Please go on.